And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own question.
I had this moment one time with her where she took all of the diapers out of the diaper bin. They were spread over everywhere. And I said, okay, please pick up the diapers. And she goes, I can't. And in that moment, what I heard was, I won't. I don't want to. Because obviously she's physically capable of picking up diapers. And so I said, pick up the diapers. She said, I can't. And I got mad at her. And I was, and I yelled. And I said, if you don't pick up those diapers. And then I had nothing to say after that because I don't really use punishment. So I had nothing to, like, yeah. Let me be mad. Yeah. And she looked at me and said, I can't. There's so many. Mm. And it hit me. She was literally saying, I cannot pick up all of these diapers. And I don't know whether she meant I can't get them all in my arms or whether she meant I'm overwhelmed by how many of them there are. But I've realized, oh my God, she's not unwilling. She's overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And so I was able to sort of calm myself down and say, I'm sorry that I yelled. I hear you. You can't pick up all of the diapers. But can you pick up one diaper? She goes, yeah. Can you pick up one diaper? And she picked up one diaper. I go, okay, so put one diaper in there. And she put it in there. And I go, now we can pick up one more. And I went over there and I actually started doing it with her. And I said, you pick up a diaper and I'll pick up a diaper. You pick up a diaper and I'll pick up a diaper. And she got it. And now I recognize when she kind of stops at, I can't tidy, there's so many. I'll say, what if you just picked up the blue Legos? Mm. What if we just picked up these? And recognizing that, like, the skills our kids actually need are those skills. What do I do when it looks like too much?
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Parenting Leadership and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today, we have a super special episode with a super special person. Her name is Casey Davis, but you may know her better as Domestic Blissers with 1.2 million followers and counting on TikTok. But as per usual, I will let her introduce herself and we'll get started with the conversation.
I am Casey Davis. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I've been a stay-at-home mom for the last 3 years, and I run a mental health platform called Struggle Care, which is based on the idea of learning how to care for yourself when you struggle and that you deserve to be cared for even when you're struggling. And I primarily focus on issues around caring for self. So home care, how do I get the laundry done, the dishes done? What, you know, I feel overwhelmed by the mess in my house, or I'm having trouble eating today. And really trying to refocus the idea that care tasks, as I call them, are morally neutral. You're not failing if it's hard to get the dishes done. And, you know, even when we're having a mental breakdown, somehow we still have to eat. And there are still dishes. And so just sort of how we deal with the minutia of care tasks in our life when life gets hard. I also wrote a book. I'm not very good at introducing myself because I just start talking about how excited I am. Yeah. I did write a book called How to Keep House While Drowning. You can get it on Amazon. It's a real short book that sort of intros into, you know, my kind of 7 principles that I talk around this issue.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for introducing yourself. Let's just kind of jump into what your journey was to get here, because I know I've talked to a lot of creators at this point, and you know, a lot of us talk about like the lessons that we've learned and the things that we're doing. Most of the time, there's a story behind kind of how we got here. We weren't always doing whatever we're doing to the level we're doing it now. There was some kind of journey, some kind of story behind it. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you got to this struggle care perspective. And by the way, I love probably one of my favorite quotes from you is just that care tasks are morally neutral. It's such a simple and kind of like a, like when you think about it, like kind of like a duh, but it is something that I think that we don't really, we don't feel that way naturally, normally. And so it is such a powerful thing to say out loud. But tell me a little bit about your journey into this struggle care perspective.
So, you know, there's kind of two stories there. There's sort of, you know, how I ended up falling into this niche on TikTok and creating all of this content. And then there's also kind of how I got to the place of knowing that care tasks are morally neutral. So I actually developed a pretty severe drug addiction when I was 15 and was sent to a psych ward and moved on to a residential treatment facility. And I always joke that, you know, my mom told me I was going to be there 60 days. And then I got there and the program was like, well, it's a 6-month program. And then I left 18 months later. So while I was there, it was very much behavioral based. So I got a lot of really good therapy there. I learned about my emotions. I learned to have insight into why my behavior was the way it was. But there was a lot of focus on just behavioral modification. So a lot of kind of token economies, for those of y'all who know what that is, a lot of level systems and a lot of punishment and reward and a lot of creating kind of peer pressure to get us to engage in pro-social behaviors or what we would say healthy behaviors. Yeah. And it worked in terms of changing my behavior. And then I left when I was 18 and I joined a 12-step group, and the group that I joined, like it was an Alcoholics Anonymous group, was almost kind of similar. Like I kind of gravitated to a group of women that had a little more of a controlling approach to mentoring and sponsoring. And that was comfortable to me because that's what I've been doing for a year and a half. And then I, after that, I actually became a part of the evangelical church, which again, had a high emphasis on behavioral compliance. And that's how you do right. That's how you get praised. That's how you feel as though you're good enough, that you're doing the right things. And everything that I did was moralized, right? It was, okay, making the decision on what to wear today. There's a right answer and a wrong answer. You know, do everything with excellence. And there were some good parts of therapy where I was learning to kind of check my motives and understand, like, why am I doing what I'm doing? But I kind of took that to this extreme where I was hyper analyzing every single decision, every single thought. Was it right? Was it wrong? Am I doing good? Am I doing bad? And I think a lot of people that have had either a mental health struggle or an addiction struggle might resonate with that almost binary mindset of I'm either doing good or I'm doing bad.
Yeah.
And I ended up leaving that 12-step group and I met my husband, who is like one of the most incredible, intelligent, kind, and like just good people to the core. But he has this very kind of laissez, like, little things like that just don't matter that much. Like, we're going to be okay. We're just going to do, you know, treat people kindly and we'll be all right. And so he loosened me up a little bit. And then I actually began to kind of deconstruct my evangelical faith and look at, you know, why did I think that certain, you know, things were like really big deals? And so fast forward, you know, I move away to a different city. I have my husband, I have some kids, I become a therapist, and I get to this very comfortable place where I'm not thinking about myself as much anymore. I'm not hyper analyzing every little decision I make on whether I'm doing good or doing bad. And I'm just able to focus on loving my family and trying to help people and just kind of being a little more chill.
Okay.
And so part of that was this recognition. I've always been a messy person. In my addiction, we sort of focused on that as being a part of why I was unhealthy, because I did have a hard time caring for myself. So, you know, I didn't shower. I was kind of living in messy filth. And they put a lot of behavioral things around that. I was forced to do chores every day. I had to shower every day. I got in trouble if I didn't brush my hair. And so they turned me into a person who was doing daily chores, daily hygiene, yada, yada, yada. And then when I got out of that highly structured environment, I went back to being a messy person, because I am just kind of a messy person. And even as I've gone through my life and I've gotten more mature and more emotionally intelligent and healthier and happier and more joyful, I'm still messy. I still don't struggle to get my dishes done. And so that kind of process of recognizing, oh, maybe this idea that it's hard for me to sometimes get housework done isn't actually a moral failing like I sort of thought it was. Maybe it's not connected to that I'm not doing good. Maybe it's not connected to whether I'm mature or happy or healthy. And so that's where I was when I joined TikTok last year. And when I joined TikTok, I had just had my second child. And I had set up all these support systems for myself so that I could take care of my mental health during my postpartum period, because I knew that would be difficult. My 2-year-old was going to go to preschool. I was going to have family come in back to back to back to back, a cleaning person to come in. And 3 weeks after I gave birth, the world shut down because of COVID. Mm. All of a sudden, I was at home by myself with a newborn and a child who had just turned 2. My husband, we were in a new city. My husband had a job as a lawyer, so he was working 7 days a week. And I wasn't leaving my house, and I got very bad postpartum depression. And I couldn't keep up. I went from messy but functional to completely not being able to function. Couldn't keep anything in my house done. There was no, the laundry, the dishes, the mess, it was so stressful and difficult to me. And my sister convinced me to join TikTok to watch the funny dancing. And mm-hmm. I did that. And yeah. One day I sort of had this moment where I had some time and I said, okay, I'm going to videotape how I clean my house, because I had kind of developed this way of doing it where I would go through these 5 categories. And when I posted that, I was surprised at how much reception it got. And the people saying, thank you. I've always felt so ashamed that I've struggled to clean my house. And when I started responding people with this message of shame has nothing to do with whether you can keep up with your house. It resonated with people. And it just over the past year has blown up to talking about how care tasks are morally neutral, and they only exist for a purpose of function. And the only reason to do them is because you're a person who deserves to function.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. Like the house is working for you. You're not working for the house. I love that. I love that thought. I love that journey. And even just as someone like I'm also a messy person, and I've never been able to really keep like a room, a house, a kitchen, anything really clean. And honestly, for you, like, I love, number one, it's just that your story, and just especially the TikTok part, really speaks to just how, you know, I tell people all the time who do have a message that they want to share, like, just go out and start sharing. You never know what people are going to connect with. And you know, there are 7-8 billion people in the world. There's someone else out there. If there's something that you're passionate about, that you really care about, there's someone else that would likely connect with that message. And if you're not the kind of person who likes to put yourself out there and speak, then, you know, there's someone who you can find likely who is sharing the message that you need. So I am a big fan, and people think anytime that like I bring up TikTok, or they're like, oh, you're like a TikTok star, like I can never get on TikTok, like I can't keep up with the dances, like I don't really dance on TikTok.
No. Not a good dancer.
Yeah, no, not at all. I just kind of share my thoughts and, you know, it resonates with people. But I want to ask, because like for me, watching your TikToks, like me being a big like generational cycle breaker and just talking about this topic of like, okay, how can we kind of unpack and unlearn and learn healthier habits of doing things than what we've learned or the way that we grew up. And this was one that I have to admit before watching your TikToks, I had a little bit of a blind spot in, or something I really hadn't unpacked really yet for myself. And because I'm ADHD as well. And so when there is, you know, if I have to clean up an entire room, which is kind of how I just grew up, okay, like when you start cleaning, you clean up everything and it's perfect. And that's the only way that you can do it, right? And if it's, your room is messy or dirty, then there's something wrong with you, that's something to feel shame about. Like, to be honest, and I don't live with my parents anymore, but I don't even know if they listen to my podcast, but that's probably one of the main reasons why I kept the door shut for most of the time growing up, because I knew that there was always going to be some kind of shame around, like if they walked past it and it was messy, there was going to be some kind of comment that was made. So I'm like, I'm just going to close the door so I don't have to even deal with a comment or deal with the feeling of feeling bad about my room being the way it was. And even when I wanted to clean my room, just the thought of like getting it all done was overwhelming, and I'd end up not doing it and it'd just be messier, and that would just be the way that I live. So I've definitely gotten a lot better at it, a lot better at just thinking of taking it in steps, creating a more functional place to live, whether it's a room or a kitchen or a house or whatever it is. Even the place I'm at right now, like it looks, you're like, I just moved into this place maybe about a few weeks ago, and there's still boxes, we're still getting furniture and everything in. But you can't tell, like, I need this space to be functional for it to look like it is somewhat a, like of an office, and there's not a bunch of distractions, but there are boxes and stuff. Like, I will, there are,
I love it,
life. But what it's functional for me is to be able to come in here, make TikToks, whatever. And so that has just been really helpful for me. Now, I want to get into, though, so there is the learning of our unpacking of our own stuff and learning to create a more functional and just a healthier way of thinking about cleaning a functional household. How do we, two things. One, what are some things that we can do to help ourselves? What are some thoughts, some principles to help ourselves in this journey? If this is something new or something that you've been embarking on, but you still kind of know you need to grow in this area. And two, how do you start to develop these healthier habits with your children, right? Yeah. How do you create that culture?
One of the things that has been really eye-opening for me is as I've been having these dialogues on my social channels about people and why they struggle so much with their home, 8 times out of 10, when you ask them to kind of really get curious with themselves, why do I feel this way? They will tell you a story from their childhood. They will tell you about growing up in an environment where they were neglected, and it was a hoarding environment. And now as a result of that, they feel like they can't have any mess in their home whatsoever, or it'll damage their kids. And you'll hear people that say, I grew up in an environment where my mom was always cleaning and she would never play with us. And she was obsessed with everything being perfect, and I wasn't even allowed to have a toy out on the ground. And now they'll either say, I hate cleaning and I never do it, or they say, I can't stop cleaning because that's what I saw, Or people will say, you know, I grew up in an environment where my parents never really taught me how to clean anything, and now I don't know how, and I'm overwhelmed. Or you get the, I went through an experience where my parents would yell at me about the state of my home, put me in my room with a trash bag and shut the door and say, clean this room. And I didn't know how. And then they would come back and scream at me some more because I hadn't done it and I didn't know how. And so people are talking about how much of an impact their childhood experiences with care tasks and how they were parented around them have translated to the way that they are having a relationship with their home and their space now. A lot of people that grew up in environments where chores were very strict, where there was a very strict sort of reward punishment system around those chores, learned to engage those chores as a way of just sort of surviving because they wanted the reward. And now they're adults and there's no one offering them a reward anymore. And they don't have the intrinsic motivation of understanding what the purpose of the chores are. Or they were punished so much for them that they're sort of having this moment subconsciously of asserting their autonomy by not doing those chores anymore. And so that sort of naturally leads those of us who are parents to, how do I not do this to my kids? How do I help my kids have a relationship to care tasks? And it's hard because on the one hand, you recognize that it's your job to help them learn responsibility, that it's their job to teach them how to do these sort of things, that you are supposed to impart to them the importance of contributing to a family, of not being entitled and thinking that everything is done for you. Yeah. And most of us have also gotten to a place where we know that if we come very hard at it with lots of punishments, lots of rewards, with threats, with the goal of behavioral modification, that's not going to work either. That's not going to get us these things over here we want. So we're going, okay, so don't punish them, but also teach them. And my kid is not naturally interested in doing these things. So where does that leave me? And, you know, my kids are really young. I have a 19-month-old and a 3.5-year-old. And so what I talk to people about is that first we have to be really clear what the goal is.
Yeah.
Is the goal to have a child that cleans their room? Like, is that really the goal? Because we can get there, but it's going to be a child there's no guarantee that if you create a child that cleans their room, you're going to have an adult that knows how to care for the room.
Right.
It might backfire on you and have the opposite. And so the approach that I've taken with my kids, and I've always really been into respectful discipline. So I'm really, influenced by this idea that, okay, let me first model for them. So one of the things that I did was I decided that when they nap, I rest. When they nap, I rest. And I try, there are times where, like, I put them to bed and do some things after they go to bed, but I try to do care tasks in front of them. I don't make them participate, but I want them to be aware there is no cleaning fairy that comes while you're asleep and resets this whole house. Like, someone is doing this.
Yeah.
I try to capitalize on the developmental period that my 3-year-old's in, where she wants to help with everything.
Yeah.
Even though it would be so much easier if I just did it myself. And some days I do. Okay. Like, some days that's what I need, is just to get it done. But I do try and recognize that this is an opportunity, if I can capitalize now on letting her be involved, letting her feel, because at that age, she feels a natural intrinsic payoff of, oh, I am participating. And so if I can capitalize on that now and get her to kind of carry that into some other things. So she's seen me do what I call my closing duties at night, right before bedtime. And then she watched me do that for a while. And then I talked to her about, would you like to have a little list? And we got a little list with some icons and just 3 things. And she feeds the cats and she tidies up her toys and she puts her plate in the sink and she gets to move her little icon. And when it comes to tidying, I've tried to stay away from arbitrary, has to be clean at the end of the night, or it has to be, you know, this certain way. And instead teach my kids the function of tidying up. So like, I'll wait. This is kind of funny, but like, I'll let them play as long as they want, make the mess as long as you want. And then, I watch my language around it. So instead of being like, oh, it's so messy, because if we always talk about mess being negative, that's going to stick. Yeah. So I'll go, wow, it's messy. You must have had so much fun in here. She go, yeah, we had so much fun. And then I'll say, but it doesn't look like there's any room to play with toys anymore. She's like, yeah, it's a little mess. And so, you know, talking to them about let's reset this space so that we have room to play. And she's not at the age where she has a lot of like forward thinking. So if you say, let's reset it now so that tomorrow we can play, that doesn't click with her. Yeah. So I've sort of reordered it, and like, I'll wait till she wants to do something. And we have like a toy library, and she'll say, let's get something out. And I'll go, I'd love to get something out with you, but we don't have any room to play with it. And she's kind of like, oh yeah, we don't. I said, what should we do? And at this point she'll be like, let's tidy up. And I always tidy with her, and I break it down really small. So I'll say, okay, you get the stuffed animals. Stuffed animals, stuffed animals, stuffed animals. Like, you get these. Let's do it. Like, do it. And anytime, oh, sorry, there's a leaf blower outside my house. Anytime I've ever said, you do that and I'll go do this, she goes, I don't know how. I don't want, I sit down. And instead of trying to threaten her or say, yes, you can, I've just realized that when she sees care tasks as a time to be with mom, as a time to feel as though she's partnering and doing big girl work, she finds it rewarding.
Yeah.
And there are still days where we'll start tidying up together and she'll get bored and stop. And at this point, I just let it be. Maybe I'll say, hey, I'd like to participate. This is your room. But I really do stop short of like making her do anything, because it's not worth it to me. It's not worth turning it into a power struggle. Because it's not just today. Getting the toys up is not the goal. The goal is this like long-term fostering her relationship to understanding that these tasks have to do with her caring for herself, her being happier, her being able to do what she wants. And so it's tricky. And I also try never to interrupt her in the middle of playing to tell her to do something, right? Like, I look for that moment of her naturally stopping and wanting to do something else. And I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but like, one thing I've done before is that, like I mentioned, I'll wait till she says she wants to do something. And then I'll say, we can definitely do that. We don't have room. Let's tidy up real quick. And if she says no, I'll say, okay, we don't have to tidy up, but if we want to do this new thing, we need to tidy up for the room. And so that, it gives me that natural limit of having the boundaries of saying, when we tidy up and make some space, then mommy will get the paints out of the closet. So it's not like I'm letting her, you know, run the show and turn the thing into a disaster where they can't function. But it's just been going a lot better that way.
So you really try to foster intrinsic motivation by, you know, tying it to things. One, her seeing the reason why you're doing, you know, the reason why to do any care task, right? Whether it's closing duties, whether it's cleaning up the space in the room. And the thing about like kids is that they're always going to want to do something else, right? And so there usually is an opportunity to set that boundary, even if they're like, no, I don't feel like doing it, or I don't want to do it, of just setting the boundaries. Like, well, if you want to do this thing, then this thing needs to be done, and kind of then giving them a little bit of the choice and some time to think and process and make the decision on their own. Because you're right, like, when they are making the decision, when they feel like they have the power to make the decision and they understand why they're making that decision. And it's tied to, you said something else too that I thought was really great, of just like how she is tying the care task to also a time to kind of bond together and to kind of contribute and work together to accomplish something. It doesn't feel like, you know, even as an adult, it feels a little bit better when you're doing care tasks together, right? As opposed to something you're doing by yourself, even if something as small as like you're doing the dishes, right? Like, okay, I'll wash them and you dry. Like it just feels better.
Yeah. Right?
And
what's interesting is that she is more excited about those sort of things. And there is some, now that she's almost four, another thing that we've started doing is that we've basically told her that these little three, she helped choose what three things she was going to do at the end of the day before bedtime. And so what we've done is we call it her list. And that the way that our evening goes is that, you know, we do your list, then we go upstairs and we read two books and we get a song and we go to bed. And she loves reading books. And so not everyone loves this approach. I've gotten some pushback on it, but what I've started to do is that if she says, I don't want to do my list, I say, that's fine. But remember that reading books and song is a part of the list. And you can choose to do the list or you can choose not to do the list, but it's the list or no list. It's not the parts you want and the parts you don't want. And I remove myself as like, I'm not the object to come against. I'm like, I'm almost just explaining the natural order of things, right? Like, well, you don't have, and she can say, I don't want to do it because I'm too tired. I'm too exhausted. I would actually like to just go straight to bed. And listen, we still tuck her in. We still snuggle with her until she falls asleep. Yeah. But we found a way to, the reason I wanted to do that way is because I do want my children to know that being a part of a family comes with privileges and responsibilities. And not this sort of black and white, do it or I'm punishing you, but that this is the way that our family moves through bedtime. And it includes benefits, like getting stories. And it includes responsibilities like picking up our toys. And I wanted to marry those together, not as punishments or rewards, but as, you know, you get to choose. Some nights it's okay. And it's not you get to choose the right thing or you get to choose to be the bad one. Like it's I don't even present it as choose right or choose wrong. I present it as what do you want? Do you want to do your list and get the stories and go to bed, or are you tired? Are you sick? Are you having a bad day and you just want to go straight to bed and snuggle with mom? Mm. And that's working for us. We're able to say, and I think maybe once she said, no, I want to go straight to bed. But usually when she says, I don't want to clean up, and I say, well, you don't have to clean up, but remember it's a part of your list. So if you'd like to do the whole part of the list, we got to do it. Let's do it together. I will help you. And she's always kind of gone, okay. And I had this moment one time with her where she took all of the diapers out of the diaper bin. They were spread over everywhere. And I said, okay, please pick up the diapers. And she goes, I can't. And in that moment, what I heard was, I won't. I don't want to. Because obviously she's physically capable of picking up diapers. And so I said, pick up the diapers. She said, I can't. And I got mad at her. And I was, and I yelled and I said, if you don't pick up those diapers. And then I had nothing to say after that, cause I don't really use punishment. So I had nothing to like, I'm be mad. Yeah. And she looked at me and said, I can't, there's so many. Mm. And it hit me. She was literally saying, I cannot pick up all of these diapers. And I don't know whether she meant I can't get them all in my arms or whether she meant I'm overwhelmed by how many of them there are. But I've realized, oh my God, she's not unwilling. She's overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And so I was able to sort of calm myself down and say, I'm sorry that I yelled. I hear you. You can't pick up all of the diapers, but can you pick up one diaper? She goes, yeah. Can you pick up one diaper? And she picked up one diaper. I go, okay, so put one diaper in there. And she put it in there and I go, now we can pick up one more. And I went over there and I actually started doing it with her. And I said, you pick up a diaper and I'll pick up a diaper. You pick up a diaper and I'll pick up a diaper. And she got it. And now I recognize when she kind of stops at, I can't tidy, there's so many, I'll say, what if you just picked up the blue Legos? What if we just picked up these and recognizing that like the skills our kids actually need are those skills. What do I do when it looks like too much?
Yeah.
Help me break this down, Mom. Teach me how to think about this.
Yeah. Man, it's the skills that I need too, because it's the same thing that just getting started, right? You go into a room and it's like, I need to clean all of this, and the overwhelm of just like, oh, like, but sometimes just getting started is what you need. They're like, okay, let me just focus on this one thing, or this is one part. And then you realize that like, once you get started, like, okay, maybe this isn't as much. I'm spending more time, you know, being overwhelmed by it than I am actually doing the task. But it takes actually sometimes starting the task. We struggle with like our ability, well, especially a child's ability, but I would argue an adult's ability too, for sure. But let's talk about specifically children. Their ability to make a mess is far greater than their ability to clean up, especially at that 2-year-old age.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, older 1, 2, 3, where dumping is just there. Like, that is their favorite thing to do. Dump. And but the what I say is like, what's great about like children in that stage is that they also like to fill. They like to dump and
yes.
too. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes as simple, like I've noticed something as simple of just like just dropping in the box and allowing it to make a little bit of a noise and like that's fun for them. And like, ooh, like I could drop another one and kind of see what it does. And just sometimes it's the little tweaks in how you do it or how you're encouraging them to do it, right? Like even like things, cleaning up Play-Doh, like is not necessarily a fun thing to do, but taking the Play-Doh and smashing it on and to get all the little pieces, like that's a fun process for them.
And one of the things also that I think is important to say is that, you know, I mentioned having some postpartum depression, and I actually only got diagnosed with ADHD in 2021. And so my ADHD symptoms, even though I didn't know I had ADHD, those symptoms were getting very exacerbated under the depression and the isolation and the postpartum stuff and the sleep deprivation. And for a long time, I knew those things about make it fun, make it about this, stay away from that, but I didn't have the emotional capacity to engage in that way. And I think it's really important to talk about for parents, you know, that the ability to think creatively about how can I put this like this to her, and making a little chart with the Velcro and, you know, having the enthusiasm of let's do this together. Like that's something that is not easy to do on an empty tank.
Yeah.
And as parents, you know, I just wanted to always be really clear that I was only able to even start engaging in that kind of parenting after I got on medication. Mm. I got on antidepressants. I got on ADHD meds. I started seeing a therapist. We were privileged enough to be able to put our kids in like a little part-time preschool. And there's a lot of guilt around that because I was a stay-at-home mom. It was kind of like, oh, is that indulgent? Like, that's kind of my job. But at the end of the day, my job is not actually to supervise my children. My job is to parent them. And I did not have the capacity to parent them the way I knew was going to be most beneficial to them when I was running on fumes. And so, you know, I did those things and I had to get myself some breaks. I had to do those things. And slowly, I'm still traumatized by the pandemic and the isolation during postpartum, but slowly I have begun to have more capacity to engage in this type of parenting. And I really think that parents should give themselves some grace if they're hearing these things and going, oh God, another thing that like I really can't do. Cause you know, when you're having trouble getting your laundry and dishes done, some of this stuff feels so overwhelming. And there are still nights where I say, go to bed. We're not doing any list. I will read you your books, but you don't have to do anything else. We're going to go to bed. And then I'm just going to go do it myself because like tonight, that's what I need.
Yeah.
And And I just wanted to mention that because I think as parents, if we shame ourselves into doing respectful parenting, like it's not going to work. It doesn't come across. It's not, you know, my kids, the greatest reward at this age is when they get to engage with me and they can tell I am enjoying engaging with them. Mm. That's like the biggest payoff of anything they're doing right now, you know, more than, you know, if you don't, you'll get punished, more than if you do it, I'll give you this. And so it's okay if like a parent's not at the place where they're ready to jump right into all of the tips and techniques on how to make playtime fun, all this. And, you know, I got a TikTok question recently that said, I just need you to tell me that I'm not a bad mom for getting a babysitter on Mondays to watch my kid, even though I'm a stay-at-home mom, because I just need a break. And I'm going to post the video today, but I said, not only are you not a bad mom, you're a good mom. Like the stuff we talk about in respectful parenting is no joke in terms of how much energy and mental focus and regulation it takes. It takes an enormous amount of energy for me to regulate my own emotions. And that, you know, we have to start with caring for ourselves and getting what we need to be able to regulate.
So yeah, I actually want to dig a little bit more into that because I agree, like that is so important. You can't pour out of an empty cup. You can only give what you have. And you know, it's not about being perfect. It's about improving. And if you could maybe even share, you mentioned you went to therapy, you got on meds. If you could talk a little bit more about like some things that you do for your own stuff, so, because I imagine even with the therapy and meds and all the things that there are still moments where you're struggling. And so what do you do to like, what is your process of first even recognizing like, okay, like I need some self-care first. Cause sometimes like get so like, the mode of caring.
So in the moment, first of all, I apologize a lot. I apologize a lot. And if like, let's say my kid's not listening and then I yell and then we've done this enough times that she'll come back to me and say, you're not being gentle and kind. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, you're right. I should not have yelled. And I'm tempted to go, but you shouldn't have. And I don't do that because I don't want her to feel gaslit. I don't want her to hear. Yeah. But there is a level of behavior on your part that justifies me acting this way.
Right.
Because I always just picture if I wouldn't be okay with a man saying it to her in a relationship, I should not say it to her either. Uh-huh. If a man screams at my daughter in a relationship and she says, you shouldn't scream at me. And he says, I shouldn't, but you shouldn't have done this. And that's why I screamed.
Yeah.
That's always my gut check of like, that's not the message I want her walking away with. So I've had to learn to walk away. I have locked myself in the bathroom before. Like these are sort of the SOS moments in the moment. Yeah. I've stopped in the middle of a sentence and gone, whoa, I'm so angry. I need to calm down. Let's calm down together and sing a Daniel Tiger song and take some deep breaths. So those are sort of my in the moment ones. And honestly, the biggest one I have right now is, two things. One is, and this is a great kind of survival moment. If you're someone who's really overwhelmed by especially toys and getting your kids to pick up toys, I started a toy library. So we emptied out a closet. We put almost all the toys in there. We take out a small number. And this is nothing new in the parenting world. And it's also nothing new to talk about rotating toys. And there's a lot of benefits to that, but that's actually different than what I'm talking about. I allow my children to check out a toy anytime they want. There's no rotation schedule. I'm not the one that takes the toys out. The catch is they have to pick a toy that goes back. Mm. And so we've really limited the amount of mess they can even make in the playroom. We're instituting some intrinsic motivation of, okay, I'm going to go get the Legos because I want to turn the Legos in because I want to get the Barbies out. It makes it a lot easier on the days when I just want to do it myself. There's still just a few things to put away. That's been really helpful. And then I'm going to tell you all, screen time has been one of my biggest tools. It's not my first, it's not my only, right? I'm on meds, I'm in therapy, I'm doing lots of breathing, I'm learning, but we still watch quite a bit of TV in our house. And I can just feel myself getting to this point where I want to get in bed and I say, let's watch some TV, because I would rather my kids watch, frankly, 4 hours of TV in a day, where that gives me 8 hours to be a kind and engaged parent.
Yeah.
Than suffer through TV so bad. And I'm just going to be, frankly, a bee for 12 hours today because I can't take it. And I've just stopped judging myself for feeling like I need too much of a break. I just stopped judging myself. And not that like, and maybe it is like, I really, and not like, oh, it's okay. I'm like, it doesn't matter if it's okay or not okay. It is what it is. This is where I am right now. This is where my mental health is right now. The truth is that I would love to be able to give my children the kind of day where screen time isn't necessary. But that's how I look at it. So if that day, if that's kind of beyond my capability, there's no like value in just like screeching by without turning the TV on like it's the devil, because that's what good parents do. If in doing that, I'm screaming and yelling and I'm dysregulated, or I'm checked out.
Yeah.
I've gotten a pretty good grip on not screaming. What I struggle with is checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that sometimes what I need is to allow myself to check out completely for 2 hours while they watch TV, then struggle to pay 20% attention all day long. And you know what? I'm feeling the capacity coming back where I have more and more ability to go longer and longer periods without feeling like I need to check out. But I want to be an engaged mom. I want to be a connected mom, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there, regardless of the kind of inner critical voice that I hear around how I'm trying to do that.
And it's better to be, you know, present for 20% of the time than to be, you know,
20% present all the time.
Right. 100%. And like, whatever the effects, like, I think the mental like health of the parent is more important. I think it's so important, not only for how you're interacting and how you're engaging with your child and who they're seeing, and how you're responding to them. Like that is a lot more important than like how much, like they're watching a couple of hours of screen time. Like I just did an episode that like just came out about screen time. And like one of like the takeaways, like if you're going to like, if you do feel any kind of like guilt and you want to, you know, they're watching a bunch of screen time and you want to feel like you're doing something, like they need to watch the screen time or you need them to watch the screen time and you want to feel like you're still helping them develop, then one, just make sure that you're allowing them for opportunities to do other things too, because the big problem with screen time is not
what is it replacing?
Exactly.
And that's my thing, is like, if it's replacing me being checked out, that's okay. Like I am very traumatized by my postpartum depression, by the pandemic. And there are days in my home where the question isn't what's the ideal thing to do. It's really harm reduction. It's really weighing the risks. What's the bigger risk right now? Is the bigger risk that they watch a little too much TV? Is that going to be the bigger impact? Or is the bigger risk that I yell or I snap or they notice my mom doesn't even want to be with me here today?
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm looking at. Like it's always better.
I agree. And, you know, just talk to them about the show, you know, afterwards, right? talk about the 4 hours of Franklin and have a conversation about it. And there you go.
Like, and I've found some other ones that help. Like I found this like kids yoga.
Yeah.
And they'll, and sometimes they sit there and just look at it. But my 3-year-old will sit there and start doing yoga.
Cosmic kids, go noodle.
So yeah. I'm not saying that, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on just this about like, because I'm not saying who cares, let's let the TV babysit. I'm saying that if I want to get to a place where we're having these amazing days where we don't watch a lot of screen time, the way to get there isn't berating myself for the screen and forcing myself to never use it, right? Like, we have to have some self-compassion. We have to recognize that I have to get uncrispy if I'm going to be helpful to anyone. And when I do that, as I do that, I can begin to look for ways to bring the screen time down, to bring the one-on-one time back up. But if I'm doing that from a place of, I just don't want to feel like I'm a bad parent, that's not the place to do it from. Yeah. It has to come from this self-compassionate, I'm doing what I can to take care of myself. And from this place of self-compassion, let's explore and get curious on some ways that we can have a little less screen time in our day. Like, it has to come from that curious, compassionate place, not from the guilt, not from the shame, not from the I'm such a bad mom.
Yes. Yes. About everyone meeting their needs. It's 12 o'clock right now. I feel like we could continue on with this conversation, but I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming on. Any last things you want to say? Anything you want to plug? Go ahead, go for it. This is your time to shine before you go.
Well, what I think we should do is we should just have a part two on my podcast.
Okay.
And we'll keep talking in this vein of, you know, maybe when you feel as a parent that you're in survival mode, because there are so many blogs that tell you the ideal way to handle things, the ideal way to discipline, the ideal way to feed them, the ideal way to do screen time, the ideal way to do, you know, whatever. But I think it could be really cool to continue our conversation part two and talk about, okay, but if you're in survival mode, if you just lost your mom, if you just lost your job, if you're in a pandemic, how can a parent develop a decision-making lens where they are caring for themselves, caring for their family, but they're able to better prioritize what, at the end of the day, what really matters that I'm giving my kid today?
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be the title of your podcast episode whenever we have it.
Perfect. If you want to follow my content, I'm at Domestic Blisters on TikTok. I am Struggle Care on Instagram and Facebook. And I have a book called How to Keep House While Drowning. And there's a website called strugglecare.com that has lots of cool resources, including some of those parenting tips that I talked about.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on, and just say bye to everyone. And
bye.
I guess bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?